Hey, Moonies. Welcome to the Sailor Moon Fan Club podcast. I'm your host, Victoria L. Johnson, and I'm here with Karamah Horn, aka the Blurred Girl. If you don't know, which I don't know if why you wouldn't know, but she is a culture journalist, content creator, host of the Blurred Girl Live, where she interviews incredible people, including some Moonies like Kid Fury, Danny Lore, and LL McKinney, who's actually on this podcast as well. She's also the author of the upcoming book, Protectors of Wakanda, a history and training manual of the Dora Milaje.
Hey. Hi, Victoria. How are you? This is so awesome. I'm glad we could finally make it work.
Me too. It was a long time coming, but welcome to the Sailor Moon Fan Club.
Thank you.
Yes. Well, first question I like to ask everybody is, what is your first memory of watching Sailor Moon?
It is definitely Toonami in the 90s. I'm gonna go out on a limb and say, because my brothers watched it too, so I'm gonna go out on a limb and say it was like somewhere between Voltron and Thundercats in there, like, because they had that block, so yeah. It's somewhere like, it was like either Voltron, Thundercats, Sailor Moon, or Sailor Moon, Voltron, Thundercats, and then like Johnny Quest or something, but it was in this block, and that was the part that they would not watch, so I had to had some peace. But that's what I would watch. And I didn't, it's funny because I got into it much later. I actually was more of a shonen person. And then a friend of mine was into it. And then I can't remember which sailor she introduced me to first, but I was like, oh, okay. They're not just like running around being cute. There's actually like a story to this. Okay. I like this.
Yeah, there is a story. I feel like that's what makes it, one of the things that makes it so great. It's like, oh, these are girls actually like fighting, doing stuff.
I'm actually looking forward to like sort of doing a rewatch with friends and on that when it drops on Netflix.
Yeah, I mean, it's all on Hulu.
Yes.
But yeah, definitely, definitely. I think that'd be, it's fun. It's a fun rewatch. I've done it a few times. Yeah, that sounds fun. I think I also was watching that. I was skipping Johnny Quest though, but I was also watching
that
whole block.
That was, I think, my brother said, but it was in that block. I remember like we would just turn it on and it would just be on for hours.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I was definitely watching that same block. Cause I love Thundercats, but I don't know what it was about Johnny Quest. I was just like, not feeling it. Time to switch to Nickelodeon. But do you have any favorite episodes or moments from the show?
I think the favorite moments, it's weird because I remember when you said you were going to ask this question, I was thinking about it. Mm-hmm. And my favorite overall moment is probably every time Sailor Moon had some crazy reaction. Like she just would always say something crazy or scream really crazy. And it didn't matter whether or not it was the sub or the dub, she always sounded insane. But it was always like the inadvertently sexual sounding stuff that was, you know, of course, would make it to the airwaves or make it like every time somebody was like walking in the room. And then I really feel like, I don't know what episode it was, but it was a really, really funny one when I can't remember the name of the guy that she was in love with that was on the motorcycle. Oh, this is bothering me. Darian, that's who it was. So yeah. Darian like showed up. And she was screaming. Yeah. Well, no, I don't think she could see that there was a girl. She was far away, but all she knew was Darian. And she was like running and squealing and just jumping and everything. And it was just so funny, her whole reaction, because she was like supposed to be doing her homework and all this stuff. And she was like, you know, it was just, so I think a lot of the stuff, and they always exaggerated her as being like, kind of like when she wasn't like transforming, she was really goofy and relatable and stuff. And so I just found her stuff hilarious. I think not my favorite scene, but one of the most memorable. And it's funny because my boyfriend compares this scene to when Goku first like grew his tail and got his powers and like went berserk. But but when Sailor Mercury died, the timeline is crazy. I'm gonna say it was the first time for me, but then I think when I found out the lore, it was probably like her third or second or something. Oh, wow. But it was the first when she was fighting Queen Barrow and the glacier and stuff, because it was sort of like, oh my god, like she's he's gonna die?
Yeah.
And then for me, I was just surprised because, you know, American cartoons, they don't kill anybody. Mm-hmm. That's why Batman has to keep beating the same people and putting them back in Gotham, you know, Arkham Asylum. Like,
yeah,
if he died, if Joker died, this wouldn't be a problem. You do realize this.
Right.
But it was really a, it was just kind of shocking. And then when you thought she was dead, and she reaches up and she's like, I'm not gone yet. And just sets her on fire and everything.
Oh, I know exactly what you're talking about. So it was Sailor Mars.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought I said Sailor Mars. Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. You probably did. I heard Mercury for some reason.
I'm sorry. No, in my head, I'm seeing all the reds. So yeah, okay. No, it was Sailor Mars. And I apologize if I said Sailor Mercury.
It's fine.
It was absolutely Sailor Mars. Mm-hmm. And Sailor Moon was begging her not to do it and not to die. And because
she was like the last one.
Mm-hmm. And she was like, nope, I got this. It's okay. I got this. And then she was lying there regretting, like she didn't have that kiss and she didn't have, you know, it was just, so yeah. I don't want to say that that's like my favorite, but I think it's one of my most memorable. Cause I was like, damn. And then, she really became my favorite. And then I got tired of her dying for everybody. I'm like, I need you to stop. I need you to stop. I need you to live, girl, live.
They gotta die every season. It's just part of. But that was the first time she did die, though. So that was, you were right on that for sure. And it's so memorable. And you're right. Like, I think that was the first cartoon show that I watched when I was younger. When I was like, this is animated and people are dying. Like, what is going on?
Exactly. Like, that's a thing.
I was talking to my dad like a few months ago, and we were talking about randomly, I think, because, you know, he knows I have the podcast and stuff. And I was talking about Queen Beryl, and he's like, oh, did they ever like defeat her? I'm like, yeah. And he's like, oh, what happens? Like, she gets away or something? I was like, no, they killed her.
They kill her.
He was just like, you were watching this? Like,
that's what I'm saying. Parents didn't know because they thought it was just like the rest of the cartoons. It's right. Like, no, they died. Yeah, like, they died. That's like, why I tell people, I had somebody who hit me up who doesn't know that much about anime that was like, listen, my son really wants to watch Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood. I'm like, honey, he's 8. No, not yet. He's not ready. Even beyond the death, the homunculus, I'm like, he's not ready.
No. Oh, gosh.
No, but she didn't know. She's just thinking, oh, it's animated. I'm like, yeah, if it's anime, you can't do that because anime stays killing children. You can't.
Yeah. Yeah. Even like, I'm thinking of like this, the like lust and like, yeah, how they behave. Like, exactly. Oh my gosh.
I told her, Disney kills the parents, anime kills the kids.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good rule. I mean, or a mantra or something. Like, it's so true.
If they can handle like somebody losing a parent, then they're okay.
Mm-hmm. Losing kids, yeah. But yeah, that is a great moment. I actually rewatched that recently because I referenced it in a Polygon article I wrote on the Sailor Senshi versus the Avengers. I was just talking about like Sailor Mars is like tenacity and like iron will, and that like totally shows it. She's like, nope, not dead yet. I'm gonna do one more attack. So
right. She was, I could do this all day. Like she's right. Really. And you know what's funny? I have to look at that article because that's a really good analogy. Because
it was fun.
Because I think people think of like Airbender a lot, but honestly, yeah, it's more Avengers.
Yeah.
Because of the different. Just the types of powers and their personalities. That's really good.
Yeah. I had Sailor Moon versus Iron Man. Mm-hmm. Sailor Mercury versus Black Widow, because they're both like tactical. Sailor Mars went up against Hawkeye because they both have like arrow attacks.
That's true.
Pretty fun. Of course, like Jupiter and Thor. And then Venus and Captain America. Oh, and Tuxedo Mask versus Hulk.
Oh, that's a good one. I didn't think about that. Okay.
Only because like Hulk was the last one left that didn't match up with anyone. And I was like, I'm gonna put up against Tuxedo Mask because that would be like funny.
It would be. No, it would be. And then it could also be like Tuxedo Mask versus Bruce Banner because they could match wits.
Ooh, I didn't even think about that.
They could, because they would go toe-to-toe in an argument all day.
Yes.
Because he likes to argue.
Yes, he does. That would be funny. I do think Bruce Banner is smarter, but yeah, that would be fun. And then, of course, you kind of like alluded to this, but like, who is your favorite Sailor Scout or Senshi, of course?
This is tough because, like I said, I thought it was Mars, and then she kept dying, and I was like, stop, I don't like this. And that, I mean, a lot of people died, but I just it was like, that, not your fave, you know? Right. And then when I met, and I cannot remember the order of meeting everybody, but Jupiter, because she was just like, I think when you first meet Jupiter, I think Sailor Moon was fending off some bullies or something, right? And she was like, she just always seemed to be like, I need you to stop. Just stop. That's what I need. And right. like whatever she was, and I'm like, I like her. I like because that just that attitude. But then so it's a toss-up between Jupiter and Pluto. And Pluto, because well, one, I'm a Scorpio, Pluto is our planet, and yes, Pluto's a planet. I don't care what anybody says.
I agree.
and I also think that I thought she was great because of just her commitment and everything like that. But then when you found out that she could like freeze time and stuff like that, and that she had this whole other job that, you know, was guarding the door of time and stuff. I'm like, oh, that's like Doctor Strange level stuff. Yes. Okay. I like this. I like this. I want you to. Yes. So Pluto quickly became my favorite as well. But I would kind of bounce back and forth or look to the two of them. And it's funny because a lot of people are like, oh, you don't like Sailor Moon. I was like, it's not that I don't like her. It's just that I'm the oldest and I'm the only girl. And so I just could relate to the ones that were coming in like, stop it. Stop.
Right. Stop fighting.
Right. That was, I just could relate to that energy because that was just me.
No, that makes all the sense. I totally get it. And I also love, like, I love Sailor Moon. Sailor Pluto is like in my top three. For that reason, like I have a key, she's on my keys. I have a keychain of her because I'm like, she's a guardian time, like the time key.
Yep.
I'm like, she's gonna be on
like
my key.
The time stone, like just the whole, and also like the time stone is green, Pluto's green. It was just a thing for me that it just was like, because it's not that I got into comics first. I was really into animation and anime first, and then comics and manga after, because I remember when I was like, wait, there's books? Like,
right. What is this? realization.
So yeah, I definitely think I lean into Pluto, but I do still really like Jupiter, and I respect Mars. I do, because she's like, listen, if someone's got to take one for the team, I'll be that person. You know, right. Sacrifice themselves. But sometimes I'm like, Mars, not yet.
Right,
you like you ain't gonna die yet. Like, hold up.
You have to jump in the fire every time.
Right. You might want to just put the fire out. Like, you don't have to throw your body on it and burn to death. Like, you could just...
It's options.
Right.
It's funny, though, you mentioned the green, because Sailor Jupiter is also green.
Yes.
So it's, like, definitely there. I also love green. It's my birthstone, emerald.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So, like... Jupiter's green. That's why it's like, you saw me before, like switching colors. I'm like, is it red? Is it green? I don't have, you can't really put up black because Pluto's kind of like black, but I'm wearing black. So.
Ooh, there you go. So all coordinated. I love it. Yeah.
The people who are listening to this are going to be so confused.
It's fine. We'll get it. That's all that matters. but yeah, I really love Sailor Pluto because he's just so badass. Super, super badass. So yeah, great choices. There are no wrong answers, but great choices. I do want to talk a little bit about you because not only about Sailor Moon on this show. I'm curious, you mentioned like getting into animation first. So what would you say is your first like introduction to like a nerdy property?
Well, okay. So this part is very strange. And it's funny when I get asked this question. I come from a nerdy household.
Okay.
I didn't know it was strange.
Same.
Until I went out. So, like, we always, the whole family stopped when Star Trek came on. Everybody watched. Well, no, I would argue with my dad over, like, Babylon 5, because I was like, it's the fake Star Trek. It's not, I know, but I'm just saying, that was our argument. And then, like, we had a family account to Crunchyroll before people knew what Crunchyroll was. And my brothers would, like, bust into, in the night, you have to be in the 90s. Person to understand this, but they would bust open like the DVDs and make them region free so that we could we were watching Japanese anime without the subtitles and Chinese movies and stuff. And then my mother, we were like, when she would get the channels, the Japanese channel, Chinese channel. And then literally when we got Crunchyroll, which was later like an account, we would, we still to this day have a family Crunchyroll account. My mother's my mother's very confused now that that Funimation and Crunchyroll have fused. But
I am too.
She's very, she's very like, what's happening? I don't understand. But yeah, I she would watch Korean dramas and Indian Bollywood movies, and I just grew up with subtitles being a thing. So I didn't know that there was a problem. People are like, oh, I'm not watching the subtitles, and I'm like, that's your problem?
Yeah,
it's kind of like somebody saying like, I don't want to buy this house because the paint color is wrong. It's like, or I don't want to get this apartment because the paint color is wrong. It's like, but you can paint it,
right?
Like, that's not. Like, it's very strange to me. Like, when people say, like, oh, I'm not going to watch it because subtitles. And I'm like, because words. Like, words are what made you make this decision? Okay.
Want to read.
So, I grew up with, so we were watching, like, Batman the Animated Series and all of the animation stuff that would come on Saturday mornings. We had a lot of homework. My family was very much focused on academics, but it was the moment the homework was done, but specifically more on Saturdays and Sundays, because it's like when the chores were done, it was all either cartoons or martial arts stuff. And so that's what we were all watching. And then Toonami, the blocks were all out of, like, the blocks came on at the same time, but sometimes the shows were all out of order. Like, you might not see the same episode or it in sequence. You know, I remember watching Bleach and going, wait, what's happening? And then it was another episode completely, you know, Naruto, the same thing. So it was, I just got into animation and then anime basically because of what we could get on TV. I grew up in Jersey, but it wasn't like we were near a comic book shop. And this was before bookstores. I remember the day I saw manga in like Barnes and Nobles. I was like, oh, we have arrived. Like, it's not, it was not like that. So I think even geeky stuff was not strange in my household. Even talk about science fiction and things like that, none of that was strange. And nobody thought you were weird. Now, what was funny was, but I grew up in a predominantly white neighborhood. So that part was strange. Being black was weird, not being a geek. I didn't realize until I got to college that the geek part was strange, because I'm talking to other people and I'm talking about, like I said, Bleach and stuff like that. And they were like, what's a Bleach? Are we talking about laundry? What's happening? And I was like, oh, okay. So I'm a different kind of weird here. So yeah, it was just, so I can't really remember the first thing. I just remember it was always there and we were always trying to like watch Transformers or watch, you know, but certain things like certain other shows, I think Sailor Moon might have been one of them. My brothers left me alone because it was like, ew, girly. And I was like, ew, you're boys. So, right, be gone. So it was, I was not lucky enough. None of us were lucky enough to have TVs in our rooms, but we did have a couple of TVs in the house and we would, whichever one daddy wasn't on, we were, you know, right, clamoring to watch. And so that was, that's my earliest memory of being a geek and just also being fascinated by Uhura, because I was like, ooh, black woman in the back, listening to all the things. I could do that. So that's my earliest geekdom, but I didn't know it was really weird until I was out in the world for a minute and people going, dude, doing that thing, that nerd thing again. And like,
really? Just talking about, okay, the thing.
Right. Because I could walk in my house and be like, you know, and my brothers would completely understand me if I would go, you know, I'm not a paleontologist. I'm a doctor, you know, damn it, Jim. Like, they would get it.
Right.
Nobody else knew what the hell I was talking about.
Yeah. Like- it's hard out here for us. Yeah, I had a similar experience. Like, my brothers were heavily into like anime and like comic books, and so I grew up with it being normal. Right. Like, I played video games like my whole life, and it wasn't until like I got to middle school and one girl was like, girls don't play video games, and I was like, they don't? Like, all my cousins do, I do. Like, that's a thing? Like, girls aren't supposed to play video games? I think that's when I felt weird. It was like, oh, I'm a girl and like not supposed to be into anime, not supposed to be into comic books, not supposed to be into video games, but I'm like, but I like these things, so I'm still going to do them.
Yeah, and I also think for me, since I grew up with so many people like, oh, you're a Black girl. Wow, novel. You know, like it was so strange. Not strange. It's just I was around a lot of people where I was the only one. That the concept of you don't, oh, I'm surprised you do this because you're a girl, like the gender part.
Right.
Really didn't happen to me, I feel, until I was fully grown. Because so many more people, it was just, I feel like as younger, as a child, it was more my Blackness was more of an issue or more odd than my gender, or at least that's how I was processing it.
Yeah.
Because we are in a very male dominated society. So I guess, you know, I think I just processed it that way, but it wasn't until much later when I had people like, you know, oh my God, why do you let men talk to you like that? And I'm like, men. Oh, white men. Oh, okay.
Right.
Because I was confused because I was like, which? I was always very awkward in that way because there's a lot. I grew up with two brothers. I was the only girl. I had guy friends. I was never afraid to talk to guys. I was clueless when they were trying to hit on me or something. I was clueless. But I just, so when people started talking about things later, and that was really funny to me because I thought Sailor Moon was very entertaining. It was much later that somebody was like, yeah, let me talk about the feminist principles behind the show. And I'm like, what?
I know.
I'm listening. And then I had to watch it again. And I was like, you know what? You're right. But they didn't click. And I probably, it's just age. It just didn't click with me.
Yeah. And I should mention, I grew up like in a predominantly Black area, which is probably why like gender was the only thing, but yeah, I think I didn't realize that either until much later, how like rare and different it was, and how that's probably a good portion of why I enjoyed the show, you know, other than it just having like good story and like fun characters and, you know, Serena's like whimsy goofiness. Like, so
I will say this, I, because my brothers could get like, I had friends too that would just get stuff on DVD and things like that. I did see some Sailor Moon episodes or some parts of it. I went through this with Dragon Ball too, that were not on Toonami. So when everybody was saying that Uranus and Neptune were cousins, I was like, no, they're not. But I'd seen the Japanese thing. I didn't realize it, but I'd seen the Japanese one first. So I was like, what? But it was the same thing with Dragon Ball because I remember trying to figure out where all the Black stuff was on people when I saw it here. And I'm like, oh, they color corrected the blood. Why did they do that? But because we had the FCC here, they had to change it so it didn't look like it was violent and that people died and that was blood. And I was like, I fully saw a DVD where that was death and that was a lot of blood. So that's not a lake he's lying in. That's blood. So yeah, there are certain things that didn't cross over. And I didn't even realize that the subs could be different than the dubs until much later when I was seeing stuff on YouTube and I'm like, oh my God, that whole episode I thought was something else.
Yeah, or whole episodes that were just like left out.
Yeah, and there were things that I saw that I was like, oh, maybe that was just part of like an OVA or just something I saw on that DVD, not knowing it was an entire episode that got left out. And again, I was watching a lot of stuff out of order, but it wasn't until much later you were like, oh my God, how much of this was sanitized?
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't realize it until I rewatched it on Hulu and I was like, I never saw this episode. Like, oh, I don't remember it happening like this. Like, what is going on? Because I had only watched the dub for so long because the original Japanese version wasn't available.
Wasn't available, right.
Yeah, but I wonder if it's on my desk. It's not. I bought a DVD for the first time.
Oh! Like,
not for the first time ever.
No, but I mean that.
A really long time.
Yeah.
from a comic book store. I went to this comic book store and it was just like, really like, kind of like dusty a little bit in there, like they had some like, you know, vintage stuff.
It's like the last, cool. they got a sale at the last Blockbuster.
Yeah, and I was like, I want to support, and I was like, but I don't want a DVD. I don't have a DVD player, but I was like, I'm still gonna buy it. And I wish I had it, but it's Nani and the Secret of Blue Water OVA. Yeah, and I was like,
okay.
look at this, because I love the anime, and I don't think I've watched the OVA anime, and I wish I knew where I threw it. I know it's somewhere in here. But yeah, but I was like, look at me buying an anime DVD, taking it back. That's so funny you mentioned that, because I've just been kind of like, I bought an anime DVD the other day, like, good for me. Now I have
That's
to buy a
awesome.
DVD player. Yeah. I guess I have the PS4. I think that plays
Yeah, I
DVD.
was gonna say it should play DVD. That should, Xbox should.
Right.
Because
Okay.
no laptops have those drives
Mine,
anymore.
no. I had like an external CD drive for a bit, but I don't know where it is. It's probably somewhere here too. But yeah, but just fun. Little tidbit. Well, outside of nerdy stuff, because once you like were like, I am, once you realized you were a nerd, you decided to like write about it. It's like, what made you transition from like being a nerd to saying like, I have something to say and I want to like share that with the world?
It's funny. I wasn't even really thinking about sharing it with the world. I was thinking of
Yeah.
no longer annoying my friends. Because I think 2010, 2012, I'm trying to remember. I'm trying the concept of it was definitely that early. 2010, 2012, and then I had run other websites before, and I just decided, let me try it. Just Tumblr. Let me hop on here and just start a little Tumblr page about some of my favorite comics, but not just comics. There was still at that time, even back in 2010, there were a lot of people talking about Black folks in comics and more representation. And I'm like, okay, I know you're right. We need more representation. But I think there's a whole bunch of comics over here that you don't know about. And I would talk about Milestone and I would talk about Sam Wilson. And I had a whole thing about basically all of the legacy of Captain America and how there were different Black Captain Americas and Truth, Red, Black, and blue and red, white, and black rather. And it's so funny because I that original blog post turned into something that I wrote for about Isaiah Bradley for Marvel that they ended up putting on their site and then ended up in a comic book, which is kind of cool. But it was just really just me saying, hey, there's stuff. And also saying, hey, there's Black comic book conventions, there's indie comics, there's artists, there's Black people who draw this stuff. Like some people draw it for, and also there are artists and writers that work for Marvel and DC that also write for themselves and work on these indie stuff. Don't you want to check this stuff out? And so it kind of got popular because there was a lot of people that were curious about it. 2012, it kind of blew up. And I transitioned over to like an official WordPress site because I'm like, all right, let me take this a little bit more seriously. And then, Twitter and stuff like that followed, and Instagram and everything like that. And Instagram was a thing then, but it was really Twitter. And then basically, I didn't intend, because here's the thing, I was a full-time video editor at the time. I went to school for that, and it was I would edit commercial short form commercials, promos, things like that. And what happened was that Blur Girl was like my geekdom, and so that's why a lot of my early stuff didn't have my name on it. It was just the Blur Girl, because I was like, at that time, you didn't meld your hobbies with your thing. It was not cool to have more than multiple th now everybody is multi-hyphenate, but that really wasn't a thing
Yeah.
then. And so
I feel like it was, sorry, very much like keeping your identity separate. Yeah.
yeah, it was and it's funny because I had people that later wrote about me like, I don't know where her name is, but I was like, because it just wasn't done. So now you want your actually I'm running into the opposite problem now with people not knowing my name because they just know the Blur Girl. But now when you start websites and stuff, everybody tells you use your own name so that people can find you. So yeah, but the concept of back in 2010, 2012, whatever, the concept of calling yourself a blur, nobody was using the term. In fact, I had asked some friends of mine, like, or some people I know knew in the community, like, do you think it would be weird if I called myself the blurred girl? Because would anybody know what blurred means, or is that too obscure? And it was like, some people might know, but it was like the right people will know, like will know, and it'll be a good call sign for people who are into like genre entertainment, like comics, science fiction, horror, animation, anime, as well as people who are in the sciences and science geeks and things like that. Like, it'll be a good way for us to find each other if we all, you know, and I wasn't the person to coin the term whatsoever. I think somebody on Scrubs coined the term. But it was really a, I wasn't the only first person to use it. I wasn't the only person using it, but I just decided I'm going to be the blurred girl and see what happens. And it blew up. But back then, there weren't that many of us. And it was, you know, there were still message boards. Tumblr was still a thing. Instagram wasn't. TikTok, Musical.ly was not even a thought. You know, it was just different. And so the way you found people was through a lot of message boards and things like that. And your handles on like LiveJournal and AO3, like that's how you found each other, through like fan fiction and stuff. So a lot of us were using these names so that people would understand who we were, you know, by that kind of call sign, as it were. Right. It, you know, it didn't have the meaning or the weight that it has now. And it also, and I'm happy about that. But when people tell me like, oh, I'm not going to call myself a blurred, I refuse. Like, I don't think there's a need to, you know, identify myself as that. There's plenty of Black people who like this stuff. And I go, you're welcome. That's fine. You don't have to. What are you interested in? I'm not asking you, you know, and that's a weird human trait. It's like the moment you call yourself something or claim something, somebody else says, well, do I have to, you know, like wearing a mask or drinking or not drinking, you know, when you say, hey, I'm not going to be drinking. And it's like, well, I can drink, right? You know, or somebody goes, they don't smoke. Well, I can smoke, right?
Like, yeah, like, yeah, do whatever like, you want to do. I'm going to like, do what I want to do.
Well, I call myself a blurb. Well, I don't have to, right? No, nobody's. It's not about you. So,
the ambassador of all Black nerds.
Right. I'm like, I don't, you know, and also the moment blurred sort of became mainstream. And it's weird because so many of us were trying to like build this community and then it sort of went mainstream and we were like, that's not what we asked. We just want to get paid for our knowledge. We weren't asking y'all to use it and run with it. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
And so unfortunately, you know, I didn't coin the term. I don't own it. I can't run out there and tell everybody to give it back to me and pay me. But I've had several people like, oh, maybe you should change your name. I'm like, oh no, it's trademarked. I'm not changing it. But I can, you know, be here as a voice of reason to say, yeah, that's not how this started. You know, it was really about a sense of community. And I specifically wanted Black women to know that there was other, you know, people out here. You know, Black Girl Nerds was one of them, but there was other outlets and other people or other websites. The only thing that I knew I couldn't do because I still had a full-time job was be a news site. I wasn't going to be the person that had the day-to-day. Mine was definitely going to be more op-ed and more thoughts and more concepts. That's what I was going to do. And I've been lucky. It's been kind of crazy, but I think what happened where things blew up is, I think I mentioned I'm an editor, or I worked as an editor. And 2016, my day job and my geekdom collided because it was a company I was working for here in New York called Black Spot, and they were subcontracted by Sci-Fi to come out to California to be one of several teams of editors to work on the live shows that happened for San Diego Comic-Con. So like when stuff goes, it's kind of like editing in a truck. So we'd be in the hotel next door to the convention center, just all holed up in like a whole bank of hotel rooms with gear. And I was one of the few women, again, the only Black woman. And we were just in there all day, just stuff that was happening on the floor. We had feeds of what was going on and we had to like edit it for social media, edit it for promos. There was a show that was coming on that night. There was all these, you know, anytime anybody's like, hey, I'm live at the Star Trek booth here. We had that kind of stuff. We had to like edit all that footage together and get it out. And so, I sort of became sort of like a de facto producer because when you have a freelance, that many freelancers in one place, they don't all have the same amount of knowledge. And so we had a lot of people that were good editors that didn't know what they were looking at. And so they were like, I need to know what Disney character that is. And it's like, that's not Naruto. That's not, You know, you know, who's the old guy on the stage next to the chick? That's Peter Capaldi. That's Doctor Who. aren't you editing the Doctor Who segment? What's happening? Yes. And that's not how you spell doctor. You know, it's like all kinds of. Yeah. So I sort of, that parlayed itself into other things. And I was asked to pitch a show for Sci-Fi. I pitched three. And one of them, the show turned into a series of interstitials that I actually ran, that I produced for all of 2017 and part of 2018. I'm sorry, end of 2018, part of 2019 on Sci-Fi Channel. If you watched Z Nation or anything, you might have caught like the little Sci-Fi Wire news blast. That was my little show. So everything started coalescing. And then by the time 2018 hit, it was just right place, right time. You know, the year started with Black Lightning. Then we had Black Panther. Tons of shows came out in the middle. And then the year ended with Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. So everybody was like, we need a Black person that knows some things.
Right.
And I was, again, the only one. But because I was the only one, I got to do a lot of stuff. And so it wasn't like I just kind of came out of nowhere. I had production experience. I had been doing the blogging for a minute, and I've been in the room. I tell people, I joke all the time, I'm like that undercover agent in Black Lady Sketch Show that's always in the room and nobody sees her. And finally, you know, they were like, oh, so you can do this. And I was like, yes.
You finally caught on there, did you?
So if there was still a learning curve, like I kind of look at some of my red carpets and cringe, but there was a learning curve. But I'm very happy to say that I was able to do a lot of good work at Sci-Fi, and they also gave me a column writing about indie comics, and when I don't think many Black women had them. And so that's sort of how my little journalism career took off, even though I was already writing and I was already going to conventions and being, I'm reporting from the Blurred Girl, you know, I'm Cameron Horn, AKA the Blurred Girl. I've been saying that from jump. So I would never have been on camera with Sci-Fi had I not put that in my contract. I would never have been asked to do, I asked, because 2016 is when we broke Netflix for Luke Cage, season one. And I feel like it was sort of the Wild Wild West when it came to like geekdom and stuff. And the MCU Endgame wasn't out yet. We were still in like the Captain America Winter Soldier, you know, phase. Like, but the MCU was a thing. Fandom was a thing. But harnessing fandom, people didn't know how to do. Bloggers, people on social media, we knew how to do that. So I think that was the big thing for me, being able to use what I knew and apply it to production and stuff like that at scale. And that was, so it looks like I just popped up out of nowhere, but I didn't. I was in the background either editing or producing or doing something. And then I just said, hey, yeah, I'm going to try this.
Yeah, no, I think the totally like, I feel like from like the beginning, early stages of like blurdom or blurred culture online, I feel like it was you and Black Girl Nerds and Black Nerd Problems that I always like saw.
Yeah. And we would see each other at events and be like, what's up? You know, it was all, and they were lucky enough to have teams of people. I didn't until very recently.
That's a major difference.
Until very recently, I did not have a team.
Yeah.
And that has been one of the biggest things I've struggled with is consistency for that reason, because burnout is real and she does not play.
No, she will make you sit down.
She will. And I am a stroke survivor. So there are times that I'm like, I'm sitting down now. And I think that was the other thing in 2013. That's when I had a series of strokes, and I went through a lot that year. And I tell people all the time, and they go, oh my God, how do you deal with fandom? And how do you deal with the hate sometimes? And I'm like, I'm walking. I could use my hands. These are things that I couldn't do for 6 months. Like, perspective is a powerful, powerful motivator. And so some days, you know, and I've been in things where people want to like, it's like, let me get this straight. You want to kill me because I don't like the Spider-Man you like. Seriously? This is what we're doing? Okay.
Ridiculous.
You know, and so I think I have been blessed with that perspective so that I know enough to know when it's time to log off the internet. Like, I don't stay there like, I'm going to fight you. But I am old school in that I will not fight you with the keyboard. But when I see you, it's on site. Like, there are certain people that I'm like,
listen,
yeah, is there a problem? And they're like, what do you mean? And I'm like, oh, here, let me show you.
Right. Screenshot.
Like right here. That's not, you know, and they're like, I was just joking. Really? Because that doesn't look like you're joking. So yeah, that's the part that people are very surprised about usually. Like, I'm really nice on the keyboard. But when you meet me, I'm like,
so
what seems to be the problem?
Yeah. No, that's real, because some people are so like, they'll say anything online, but like in person, it's a completely different story. And it's like, you go say it, stand behind it.
Exactly. And that's the problem. Cause it's like, see, now that I'm in your face, you're shaking. That shouldn't be the case. What happened to all that you had coming from your chest when you were online?
Right. Yeah.
You know, so, and that's what I really hope people understand. Like, sometimes when people say something crazy, like, go check their profile. They could be 12. Like, just.
Yeah.
Especially on TikTok. Like, I'm not going to fight you. Mm-mm. Like, literally, yeah, I'm not fighting you. And here's the thing. I'm having a blast on TikTok, by the way. But I just, there have been some horrible things that people have said. And I've been like, where is your mother? Like, like, are you even old enough to have a phone? What are you doing?
Like, you bypass this TikTok terms and agreements.
How did you get in here? So, yeah. But I've been lucky, and I was, again, right place, right time. But at the same time, I was ready.
Right.
You know, nothing was given to me. Trust me. I can tell you that there have been a lot of pitches and a lot of conversations and a lot of unsuccessful projects and a lot of things that didn't go well and a lot of very bad makeup days that have just, you know, led me to, but I knew I could do the work as an entertainment journalist in this space. It took me a long time to call myself a journalist because I went to Northwestern. So I'm thinking Medill School of Journalism, you know, research and investigative reporting, and I've done investigative reporting, but we have a thing. I was raised with if you didn't go to school and get that title, you can't call yourself that. That's not the world we live in now, because you can learn anything on YouTube, honestly, and become learn more than the average person who's gone to school and actually know more about it. So,
and like the experience throughout the years, like you've been writing for so long. Like,
exactly. And I actually had to have a conversation with a seasoned journalist to tell me that. She was like, okay, I've been writing for a decade and so have you. It doesn't matter that you don't have a journalism degree. You have a media degree, but that doesn't mean that you can. And so I had to get past that so that I could, you know, because I've not only been writing entertainment journalism, but I've been writing scripts and I've been writing things like that. And then, you know, with the video editing on top of it, the book was new.
I was just going to mention that. I was like, speaking of like, people who like come with that energy, like, did you say something? I feel like, yeah, the book is definitely where I wanted to go next. Is just, how did that come about? Yeah, that is different. You are an author.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. That author. Now I have to fight calling myself. So now you see my profile just says writer because I can't. Again, it's too much.
You're an author. Accept it.
I am an author.
Thank you.
Okay, so. It's very strange, but they came to me, and they was weird because it was Marvel, but it was not directly from Marvel. So when you write prose work for Marvel, whether or not that's YA or kids lit, and no, they're not the same thing, or children's lit, just found out recently, that's also not the same thing. They have these different subsidiaries. Simon & Schuster covers most of it, but then there are subsidiaries of Simon & Schuster, including this company called Becker & Mayer. I had never heard of them, neither had my Google, and they went to my junk mail several times before somebody said, look, somebody from Marvel's trying to get in touch with you. And I was like, what? And so I had to go look and found this email, and they're like, hey, got on the phone, and they were like, we want you to write we're very interested in you writing a book for us about the Dora Milaje. And I'm like, are you sure you meant me? Which, listen to me, that is not what you're supposed to do. When your blessings come your way, you're not supposed to say, I don't think you mean me. Don't do that.
I'm glad they didn't listen to you.
They were like, yes, we mean you. You come highly recommended. And then, of course, also something you're not supposed to say, who? You're not supposed to do that. You're supposed to say,
I'm glad you said that.
Thank you so much. I did ask, and I did ask later, you're not supposed to do that, though. You're supposed, because I immediately was like, huh? And I was like, okay, we'll get there. But so I was excited to do it. One of the reasons that made me say yes was the book is written in journal form. And any book that's written in journal form, it's almost like a series of short stories because they're entries. And I'm like, okay, entries, articles, I see the connection. I could do that because I've written things that are like 10,000, 20,000, 30,000 words, but I hadn't written like I hadn't looked at it like a book. And when you have YA books with pictures, it actually comes out to be about, you know, you could get it in like 50,000 words. Mm-hmm. So what I did was I swallowed my pride and I said, this is terrifying, but I'm going to try this. And it was really terrifying because I was like, oh, I need to, they don't give you a lot of time to write these things. I think I had 10 weeks to write the entire book.
Wow.
Yeah, it's crazy. You don't have a lot of time. Maybe I had 15 weeks. It's just still what, it was definitely less than 20 weeks. There were weeks involved. It wasn't years. And it was, when I started looking at it and I started thinking about it, I said, you know what? The Dora Milaje don't have a connected story. They always show up in somebody else's story. This is a very unique opportunity. And then it was just talking with everybody, about it, like behind the scenes, Marvel and Simon & Schuster and everything. It was a very interesting meeting at first. The first meeting was terrifying. There was like 20 different people on this Zoom and they were all there for me. And I was like, I am petrified, but I'm going to do this anyway.
Yeah.
And it was a really interesting meeting because they wanted to hear some of my ideas and they really liked them. And I was like, okay, well, if they really liked them, then I might be onto something. The very strange thing about writing licensed work is that they don't really tell you where the fence is. You don't know it until you hit it. And then you're like, you can't do that. I'm like, okay. So the only warning I got in the beginning was you have to stick to the comics, not the MCU, which to me was a little disheartening because I know a lot of Black folks got into Black Panther and comics through the movies. So I'm like, okay, that means Nakia's out because Nakia in the comics is dead in every iteration. She's had met several and they're all dead. So it's like, I was excited, but in the beginning, it really felt like a thesis because I really had to pull from a bunch of different, not just Ta-Nehisi Coates run, but also, of course, Christopher Priest, because he created the Dora Milaje, but then also Little Don McGregor, definitely some Jason Aaron, also Jonathan Hickman, also Jonathan Mayberry. Like Jonathan Mayberry created the Midnight Angels. So, and then of course, Roxane Gay and, you know, Yoma Harvey. So it was interesting basically finding a thread that I could pull multiple times, multiple threads that I could pull in between all these stories to create one story. So what Protectors of Wakanda actually is a training manual that is given from elder Dora to younger Dora as they come through the training program. So I actually got to formulate how the Dora are trained, what they learn, what they do, what their tenets are, things like that. It's not a workout book. I don't know who said that on social media, but all these people like this book. I'm like, it's not a fitness book. I don't know who said this. I don't know who started this crazy book. This is not a workout book, and you are going to be very disappointed.
I kind of want the workout book though now, to be honest with you. Separately, like this book sounds amazing, but I also kind of like.
I don't want to write it though because I am not in shape, so I don't want to be the one.
That's why I need the book.
So. It was it was a lot of fun. It was, I think the first part of the book for me really felt like a thesis because, again, I had to do all this research. But then I got to do some really fun stuff, and I got to, we know Okoye, we know Ayo, we know Anika, but there's also Teela, who's actually the head of the Midnight Angels, and there's Nerima, and there's all these other little Dora that randomly get named occasionally that I got to give a little bit of life to. And so the book covers kind of all the things that the different Dora have to do, and then all of their outfits. That was the part I was adamant about. I'm like, I'm gonna need y'all to get, because this is the thing, when you work on a prose book, you don't always get to choose your artists. And I had the same thing. So I could give my choices, but it was up to the publisher and Marvel and whoever to pick who they wanted to pick. And I'm like, I need you to understand that cosplayers are going to need these pictures. So I need you to make sure that we are doing this properly. So that is one thing I'm excited about, like people seeing the different outfits. And just also the other really cool thing is the book is sort of it's published by the same people who did the Jedi Manual. And anybody who has a Jedi Manual knows that even though there's all this lore in there's different Jedi that are writing in the margins and stuff. And so my book is a similar thing. It's a journal, and that because it was passed down, there's different Dora that write different things in there. And it's kind
I
of
love
funny
that.
to see, like, that's where the Easter eggs are. That's where, for people who are like Black Panther fans, they're gonna be like, oh, I know what that meant. I know that reference. You know, that's gonna. And I can't wait for people to uncover those. And then, but it was definitely a challenge. It was definitely the scariest thing I ever did. I definitely cried over that book. I was like, you're gonna hate it. And then I went from that to being like, oh my God, I'm so excited. And now I'm kind of petrified because I'm, just like waiting for it to come out. But it's really a lot of fun. And these kind of books, you don't have room to write, like they don't let you write like dedicated to or anything because it's licensed material. But the book is really for my niece. Like I have my baby niece, she's only three, but when she's like 10, I'm gonna be the cool aunt that like wrote the book about Dora Milaje, and then like, I'll be able to be like maybe the person that comes to school for like the show and tell, the cool parent. So I'm hoping that, I'm waiting.
Happy for everyone.
Right. So I'm hoping that that's who I really wrote it for, so that she could see like she's gonna grow up and not know that weren't black superheroes. Like she's not gonna grow up like us, like, okay, Panther's black because that's what we want him to be.
Right.
Like she's
Piccolo, yes.
exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. Like she's gonna grow up knowing that, yeah, no, they're my heroes and there's another one. And so I'm very excited about that. And I'm excited to know that a lot of other young girls are going to be able to see this. Of course, I want my peers and my friends to like it too, but it is a YA book. I think the other thing that I'm excited about is there are certain things that I've known, but that I don't think a lot of other people know. One thing that I can share that we've talked about a bit is I think a lot of people, especially those who only know the MCU, know T'Challa and T'Chaka, maybe a little bit about T'Chaka's father, Azuri. But there are 16 Black Panther that are canon, and two of them are women. And a lot of people don't know that. And I get to talk about them, and I get to talk about the Dora that were with them. And I can talk about, I think the other thing that I'm excited about is because I was able to talk about the Midnight Angels. That means I could talk about Doom War because that's where they were born out of. And anybody who knows anything about the Doom War run in Marvel, there were like 500, 600 Dora. So even though people have this visualization of only four Dora walking around, there's a lot of them. And, so I think what I did was I started with a bunch of questions, like, what happens when a Dora gets injured? What happens when a Dora retires? Like if she ages out, like we ain't got 90 years olds on the field, so what do they do? Like where do they go? We have And also, you see people just using different things. There's different artillery and there's different weapons and there's different, you know, even when Okoye says, you know, ugh, guns, so primitive. But what if it's more than that? Like, for instance, like vibranium is really, really valuable and no one wants it to fall in the wrong hands. So if you have a vibranium bullet and you shoot somebody, you got to go get that bullet.
Right.
So it's also, it's not just primitive. It's a pain.
Yeah.
So if you're trying to, you know, win a thing, it's just easier to just stick somebody and go versus shoot them because we don't got time to be going retrieving all this artillery.
Right.
It's kind of like Hawkeye trying to go back and get those arrows. Like, this is not convenient.
Mm-hmm. No.
So performing surgery on the field, you know, that's not convenient. So there are certain things I was able to do like when the Dora Milaje show up, even though this is not referenced in my book because it's MCU, but Falcon and the Winter Soldier, when Io is working with Bucky and she's trying to break him of his programming or whatever, I kept watching that scene going, how did she learn how to do that? Where did that come from? Where was that training? And so that's the kind of stuff that I tried to put into this book. Like, what are the different, what make up the Dora? Because people just see them as these bald women with these spears that'll kill you. But there's more. There's a, Roxane Gay wrote that. There's love there. There's sisterhood there. There's a sense of responsibility there. Where does that come from? And who built that? And what tenets are those built on? So just trying to build out this lore a little bit, I'm very excited. And I'm super excited for people to see it. I really just want people to enjoy the book. A lot of people are like, oh, what if it's part of the TV show? I'm not there yet. I just want the book to come out and I want people to enjoy it and enjoy what, have as much fun with it as I did. But it was very exciting. I will definitely write a book again. I don't know how soon it'll be a licensed book, but I will definitely write a book again. I've got other stories in me, but I think this gave me the, confidence to go, okay, I can do this.
Yay. Okay. This. That makes me so happy. I'm very excited for this. Like, as you're creating it, I just feel like you really took a storyteller's approach to it. And I feel like that's just really cool how you like went through and thought, like, what don't people know? What's not as known? And even just like filling in kind of like the gaps that were there.
Yeah, like I've had people talk to me about like, oh, you know, what about how young they were? And it's really funny because if you go back into Christopher Priest's run, yes, when he's first introducing them, do they look young? Absolutely. They don't look like children, but they do look young. But it's not T'Challa, it's Everett Ross. It's the white FBI agent who's saying, oh my God, they look so hot. Oh my God, mm-hmm. But I could go to jail because they're so young. Like, it's him that's, again, using these Black women as objects of desire, right, as opposed to who they act, you know, the respecting them for who they actually are. Mm-hmm. And so one thing I can share is that there was some discussion early on about like the ages of these girls. Like, they can't be child brides. I'm like, they've never been child brides. Who told you they were child brides? And it was like, right, well, aren't they supposed to be 14, 15? I said, no, that's what Everett Ross thought they were. Well, why would he think they were so young? I said, have you never met a Black woman that looks younger than she actually is?
Mm-hmm.
So there were those kind of nuances I liked putting in there too. And then the other thing I tried very hard to do was make it feel authentic to not just the area, but the continent. And I think that's something that's very difficult to do with Black Panther as a whole, not just my book.
Yeah,
because it's a character that was created by white men that has been reimagined by Black folks. Ta-Nehisi Coates, Christopher Priest, Ta-Nehisi Coates, Reginald Hudlin, Roxane Gay, Yona Harvey, Evan Narcisse, reimagined by them and now me as well. But the parameters of the world are still what was created in canon. And some of that canon is not as African as we would like it to be. So it's about pushing those boundaries a little bit, stretching, you know, because there's certain things that I wasn't able to do this, but there's certain things I've always wanted to do. Like, it's just always bothered me how nobody in Wakanda has a last name. Everybody in the MCU has a surname, but nobody in Wakanda does.
Right.
And it just bothers me. I'm like, except for Queen Divine Justice, Asira, because she came to the US. It's like, oh, well, she became American. That's why she has the last name. But anybody who knows anybody African knows that Africans have got like 17 names.
Yeah.
And it's just, but it's just a very strange, and that's not, it's just one of those things that you can't change because that's how it started. And if you give these people last names, we got to go back and retcon everybody. And we're not doing that. And I'm like, but giving them only one name is very slave-like. And I don't like that. But that's not something I can change. What I did do was really try and give agency and a concept of the regions that everybody was from so that some of their cultural things, you know, came out. But yeah, there's just certain things that you can't change because they're canon. And if that canon is not written by somebody like us, we're not going to see that. But I was able to weave in some real life African history in there. And that is something that I can't wait to talk about when it comes out.
That sounds really exciting. Well, I will tell you, even if you still are, hopefully you're not still questioning it, but you, I feel like you're absolutely the right person. They reached the right person, not just because of your experience, not just because of your like vast knowledge, but just like you're so passionate about it and you really like took it to heart. And I feel like that's just shows, you know, you're the right person for the job.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I hope so. I mean, listen, there's going to be some fanboy somewhere that doesn't like it. And I've already settled myself on that. But I think the majority of the people will enjoy, I hope, will enjoy what I tried to do. And I hope it opens discussion. And what I really hope happens is that some of the characters or some of the situations get comic books, you know, out of them. Because I think that would be fun if some people... Yeah. And it doesn't have to be me. I would love it if somebody else did it, but if somebody could take some of the stories or some of the people and just go, hey, let's make a thing out of this. I think that might be exciting.
That would be really exciting. I mean, it's all exciting, but that would be exciting too, for sure. I'm curious, as you were like rereading, like basically the whole Black Panther comic lore.
Yeah, it was a lot. Oh my God. My comiXology bill was crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. I went through the Priest run, few years ago, and that alone it's
a lot.
And I interviewed Reginald Hudlin around the time Black Panther came out, and so that was really exciting. So I read his run, and of course Ta-Nehisi Coates, but like so much more. But in your reading, what would you say is your favorite Dora moment from the comics?
From the comics, my favorite Dora moment is definitely in Doom War. It is in Doom War. I'm trying to remember exactly what's happening, but the Dora know that they are going to have to go out and fight the Doombots and sort of stall until T'Challa reinforcements show up, and they know a lot of their ranks might die, and Anika says, like, you know, she has this incredible speech and they're all just standing there like, yeah, this is what we do. This is, you know, and she says, she talks about the fact that we are, you know, daughters of the ancestors and we are Wakandan women, the deadliest of the species. And it's just one of those things where it's like, there's war, there's gonna be more war, and the dudes are gonna do what they gotta do, but we run things differently. And it's just one of those moments that I'm like, and it's so weird because it wasn't a woman who wrote it, but I just love that that concept.
Right.
And it was just the first time you really saw the Dora having agency. And then of course, when the Midnight Angels are introduced, because what people don't realize is the Midnight Angels are introduced and then like two pages later, they hang out with Deadpool and it's like them and Deadpool trying to infiltrate Latveria. And it's hilarious because Deadpool can't keep his hands to himself, but it's just, and that's one of those things, like if Deadpool ever goes to Wakanda, I need the scene to happen.
Oh my God. I want it so bad now. I need that. I
But yeah,
absolutely need that.
I think that one is powerful. In fact, it's so powerful. I know I quoted part of that speech in the book. That's definitely my favorite Dora story. Now, I'm not knocking also Roxane Gay's run, and I was very lucky to be able to have a conversation with Roxane Gay about her comic book that's out The Banks that she's adapting for TV. And at the
Oh,
end of that interview, I
excellent.
was like, by the way, I'm writing this book and thank you so much. I started like fangirling a little bit. That was
Yeah.
so cool. And it's like, I just thanked her because she built this foundation that I could then, build on.
Right.
And World of Wakanda is very, very close second, if not a tie, because again, we are seeing the Dora, and they are not just these drones of people who just do whatever the king says. They're independent people who are like, we're here, you're not. What is your problem? Because for people who didn't read that comic, the Dora actually, for the first time, go against T'Challa when they think that he's basically lost his mind and siding with
Right.
Namor, who has just destroyed the better part of the Golden City. So they don't know there's a whole other thing happening, but it was a really interesting run. And without what Christopher Priest did, and without what Roxane did, and even without what Jonathan Mayberry did, I couldn't have done my book. So I owe a little bit to everybody.
Right.
But yeah, I definitely would say Doom War and World of Wakanda are my favorite Dora books.
Yeah, World of Wakanda is also a great run, really fun series. And then a little fun question. The Dora Milaje. Like, I almost have to stop myself.
It's
Or Sailor Senshi. Who do you think they would be? Like Okoye,
okay.
Io, yeah.
Sailor Pluto in black is Okoye, because no matter what happens, she's guarding that door.
Yes,
That
that's true.
sense of duty, that freezing time, she would go against that whole without question. She's, I'm sorry, I love y'all, but this door is what I do, and I've been doing this since for before you all. So that sense of duty, I think, is Okoye. Second, would I would think is Jupiter, because she's like, stop. Just constantly like, stop your nonsense. I don't think Okoye is really like Mars at all. No, I was gonna say Pluto, because her sense of duty is Okoye. Now, at the same time, I'm gonna say, Uranus or Neptune are like Io and Anika.
That makes sense. Ooh, I love that. I didn't even think about
Yeah, and they're I'm trying to think of some of the other Dora, but it's funny. If I was going with like MCU, I would probably say, that one sis that Killmonger killed, and she knew she was gonna die right before she died in the movie. Like, she was like, Wakanda forever, and then he like snapped her neck. I was like, that's Sailor Mars. Jumping in there before anybody told her to. She knows she gonna die.
She was like, kill me
Right. All
about
right.
that
I'm like,
life.
yeah, all right. There goes Mars
Yeah,
again.
I can see that totally. She's definitely jumping in the battle. That's funny. Yeah, absolutely. That makes a lot of sense. And that everyone always answers these in like way better ways than I like would ever. I'm just like, oh my God, that makes a lot of sense. Like, who would have guessed? Who would have knew? Also curious, what what's your favorite piece of nerd merch that you own?
Oh,
Baby Yoda?
this
Yay!
is my emotional support squishy because he's squishy.
Oh, I love
So
that.
he's my emotional support squishy. I do have another like anime squishy. That's it. That's I think it's in my bedroom right now because I needed that. But yeah, sometimes if anybody has seen my live streams, they will see my emotional support squishy behind me. He's like a big white puppy.
Oh.
But yeah, it's this little guy and my baby Yoda, and I might have to hold him. I think he's gonna fall. My baby Yoda and My emotional support squishy that sometimes shows up. Yeah, I'm a very like tactile person. So I need to like, something is stressful. I need to be able to like, yeah, grab onto it. And it was very funny. When Kid Fury was on the show, we had our babies together.
I saw that.
Yeah, we had a play date. We had a play date.
Love it.
That's so cute.
I'll leave it back there.
I see him. Aw.
Yeah. I love plushies too. So yeah, that.
I also have a lot of Funkos, but they're not really here, and you only see some of them here. I've got another shelf of like in another part of that place that's got a bunch of Funkos.
Two Funkos, and I stopped there because I was not get into this.
You got to stop because then everyone that comes out, you want to get that one. Yeah, it's,
especially bad. Like as a fan of Sailor Moon, it's like okay, I need to get all the sailors, and then you got to get all of their different forms, and they started doing the villains,
right? And then there's Hello Kitty Sailor Moon, and then there's all these other people. Like there's all
I got Sailor Moon, I got Tuxedo Mask. I'm stopping there. But then like they put out like the Moonlight Knight version of Tuxedo Mask, and I was like, oh, I kind of want it. And then they did like the Prince and Demian. Then they did Sailor Moon in like another outfit, and then they did like Wicked Lady, and I was like, oh my god, y'all are killing me.
And then isn't there, no, I'm not as familiar with the later Sailor Moon, but isn't it Sailor Crystal or Sailor, what's the later one?
You mean the one that recently came out like on Netflix or?
No, not the one that came
out. Her outfit.
Not the one that came out on Netflix, but there were two, it was like Sailor Scouts and Sailor something else. And it's a different, there's not that many episodes. And I think maybe it's still in Japan right now, but it's like
there is Sailor Moon Crystal, which is the reboot.
Yeah, the Crystal. Okay. That's what I'm thinking. I don't know, as you can tell, I don't know anything about Crystal. Yeah. But my thing is like, when you get into Crystal in those outfits, then you got a whole other price tag.
Probably, yeah. I mean, they're, I guess, very similar, but it's tied more to the manga, so I imagine they're probably gonna like redo, like, oh, we did the reimagined Funkos that are like closer to like the Crystal type, so maybe.
It's really funny how they feel like they have to like resell the old one, or I'm like, the people that grew up with this are giving this to their kids and their friends and their nieces and their nephews, like, you don't have to sell this, we got it.
Yeah, like we can buy more. I will buy one for everybody. Yeah, so there's so many, but yeah, Crystal Reboot. It's pretty good, but that's another story. And then what else do you stand outside of the nerdy world?
Well, and it's so funny because I was thinking of more nerdy stuff, and I was like, oh, not nerdy. Okay. I am going to say I am a closet K-pop fan.
Ooh.
And I say closet because I'm like second generation. I am a SHINee fan.
Same.
I'm Super a Shawol, and I'm right. So Super Junior, SHINee. But at the same time, I still like and was listening to BoA. Mm-hmm. See, I heard BoA in Japanese before I heard her in Korean, so I didn't know she was K-pop at first because I heard her Japanese stuff, and I was like, wait. And then I was like, but she's before all of them? So yeah, I was like a little SM person for a minute. And then, I mean, I think the newest people I'm into are NCT and all of their like iterations. I'm not into the girl groups as much. Like the girl groups I like are like G-Idol and like, I was, you know, of course I liked CL and 21 when they were out. So that energy, I like that a little bit more than Twice is very Sailor Moon. Twice is very Sailor Moon. I don't like everything Twice does. And here's the thing, I don't hate them. It's just I didn't get in on the ground floor, so I don't know everybody.
It's hard.
So yeah, I like them, but the more I watch them, I'm like, this is very Sailor Moon. Like they all have different energy and different and then it's really funny. I just started listening to Luna. Because a friend of mine, and this is a 45-year-old black man, is obsessed. And I don't mean obsessed in like a creepy way. He knows all of their lore. He knows all of the story. Because Luna is laid out like they chose a manga storyline. They each have different powers. They each have different things. They each have different, I'm like, this is brilliant. But yeah, Luna's fascinating to me as well. But I'm really more of a boy band stan. And yeah, but like Tenman's in the army and he's not doing very well, so I couldn't watch. Like, who am I gonna watch right now? I gotta wait for Tenman to come home. But yeah, I used to watch all of their little all of those, even Dumb Bang Shinki, all of their little reality shows, and they used to have all the stuff that they did. I was fascinated. Because we just didn't have entertainment like that here. Also, I just needed to listen to some music where I wasn't be calling being called out my name. Just
That is nice.
I just needed something to, you know. And they had, I was fascinated by the fact that so much K-pop had so much R&B in it. Like Teddy Riley did all the beats for SM Second Generation, basically. Some people from not just Guy, but also actually he worked with CL. Will.i.am set up shop out there for a minute. There was a lot of black artists and producers that produced a lot. So you'll hear a beat and you're like, that's 90s R&B. And but then all of a sudden they start singing in Korean and you're like, wow.
That happens to me so many times in coffee shops, and I'm like at a Korean coffee shop, and I'm like, oh, this sounds like a 90s R&B song. And I'm like, oh, this isn't in English. Okay, interesting, but like I'm vibing.
I actually fell down the rabbit hole completely by accident. I was watching Ninja Assassin with Rain.
Rain.
I didn't know Rain was a K-pop star.
Me neither.
I knew he was, you know, I mean, the acting was okay. I mean, he was cute. Obviously, he had the great body for it and everything. But when one of the people in the movie said, like, he looks like he's in a boy band, and I'm like, you don't say that line unless,
That sounds like an Easter egg.
yeah, it sounds like an Easter egg. So I just looked him up and I'm like, oh my God, this is like a thing. And it was so like theatrical and like the weekly shows and everything that looked like concerts and how the concerts were so theatrical. I was done. I fell down that rabbit hole and I went forwards and backwards. So I went back into Rain and BoA and everything. And then I went forward. Into, I mean, everything that was out at that time was just bananas. And yeah, it was nuts. I think Ring Ding Dong was my first Shiny song. And
Ring
then,
ding
yes,
ding
exactly. And then I went back, and then I was like, I realized that I had heard Replay, but I didn't realize it was them. So it dawned on me that I'd heard it, but didn't know it was them. And so it was like, I was just fascinated. And I'm like, there's tons of content, there's
Love
tons
it.
of stories. And I was just fascinated by the whole Hollywood. Now, I mean, we've come to realize that it's not always healthy, but the whole Hollywood setup that they have, old Hollywood, like how people would, they move in on the campus and get trained to sing, to dance, to speak the different languages, to do press, and but how demanding it was, and on, you know, and I think, you know, Jonghyun may rest in peace, they're just not being able to deal with the pressure, and then with the added amount of depression, you know. And so it's not always, that's why I say closet, because if I talk about it on Twitter, I get dragged up, down, left, and right about like how horrible it is. And I'm saying, like, I acknowledge the fact that the music industry as a whole can be nasty. But I still like some of those songs, and you will hear at any point in time, even my boyfriend, I got him a follow, he will put on a Shiny concert at any point in time on YouTube. So that is one of my things that I love that is outside of, I still think that's kind of geeky, but it's outside of geekdom.
It maybe, but I think that counts.
And then the other thing that I'm kind of obsessed with, and it started in 2020, was a Great British Bake Off.
Oh, I hear great things about that
I'll tell you why. I think when I started watching it, because 2020 was a dumpster fire, as we all know.
Yes, we
And it
all.
was just a day that I was really, really down. And I had a friend of mine that was like, listen, it doesn't make any sense, but just listen to me. If you can, if you have BBC, go just watch a couple seasons of The Great British Bake Off. It will make you feel better. And I was like, it's cake. He's like, I swear to God, do it. And it is the nicest competition I have ever seen in my entire life. Like, they help each other, you know, when, and no, there's no nastiness. Of course, people have moments, but there's no, like, it's not like, you know,
Gordon Ramsay
Housewives or something. Yeah. So, yeah, that I will say, when I'm having a bad day, The Great British Bake Off is still, it's either The Great British Bake Off or Ghost in the Shell. I know that sounds very strange, but those are the two things that I watch to, like, just have, balance. It's balance.
I love that. No, I totally get it. I totally get it. That makes a lot of sense. I feel like Ghost in the Shell is also very, like, therapeutic somehow. Like, it's just, I don't know, something about it just, like, will slow you down.
Yeah, I like, well, I like it and some, a lot of the seinen anime for that reason, because a filler episode in seinen is, like, philosophy. It's not, you know what I mean? It's not sitting at a beach and randomly looking at people, you know. It's just Ghost in the Shell has people know it for its action, but Standalone Complex has some really interesting philosophical and political storylines, and I rewatch it every now and then and I'm like, my God, this is so timely. It's crazy how this holds up. So yeah, that it's definitely one of those, people look at me funny, but like Ghost in the Shell, I'm like, yes, okay.
Listen, it works. That's all that matters.
It does.
What advice did you give someone who wants to get into journalism, blur journalism, or just journalism, or write a book, which you did?
Well, first of all, just start. So there are so many things, especially for anybody who's, I keep telling people, stop asking people that are like, and I shouldn't say you shouldn't ask for advice from people older than you, but ask for advice from people that are older than you to a certain point, because the industry changed so much so quickly in the past 5-6 years that there are people that are journalists that I meet, that I talk to, who don't even write the same way that they did years ago.
Right.
So first of all, start writing. And start writing consistently. That's tough, but try. And even if you don't, I mean, Squarespace is pretty cheap, but even if you don't want to, like, start writing on your own blog, Medium, start a Medium page. You can do that for free and just start writing. I would say eventually transfer your stuff over to something like WordPress, because it, you know, sites go down, you know, but if you don't have the guts to start posting right away, just start writing. Just writing in Google Docs. Just make a folder, call it whatever the week is, and write something every day on different blank pages, you know, in there, and then start trying to codify what you're thinking about, what your niche is. And I know there's a lot of talk about don't niche down or whatever. You have to be known for something. And that's what the niche is. So for me, I have stayed consistent saying I write about geekdom. I write about sci-fi, fantasy, comics, superheroes, a little bit of horror, anime, you know, that's what I do. Now, people have come for me for that. They're like, oh, why won't you write about this other movie? It's black. I'm like, yes, but it's not my genre.
Right.
That filter has helped me, and that's helped me tremendously, because when they say, like, we need somebody who understands something nerdy and geeky or superheroes, my name pops up. Like, people know that, so I'm known for that. Now, my reviews for The Wrap are kind of now expanding. Like, I just wrote a Bridgerton review. That's not sci-fi. So it doesn't mean you can't do other things, but if you get on your site, if you're known for something, you can then expand on that. People are chasing the wrong things. Everybody wants, like, oh, I'm gonna write all this stuff about comics and then I'll get invited to the red carpet or whatever. No, you won't. That's not why you get invited. You get invited if people have seen you talk about it. If people have seen, and it's funny because people look at, I'm thinking of, like, Straw Hat Goofy on TikTok, and they're like, oh my God, they just picked him because he got a lot of followers. Johan Kufi's been at it for a long time, and he's been reviewing all kinds of movies. Y'all blew him up over Geekdom, but go through his feed. He's been talking about non-popular movies, indie movies. He wants to be, like he said, your movie guy. So, and he had a day job. And he's just recently quit that day job. That's what I was going to tell you. Don't quit your day job. There's not until you can have enough saved up. Mm-hmm. And it's weird. It's going to be a point where you think you're going crazy, but you have to be so busy at your job and so busy with your side hustle that it's really hard to do both. Mm-hmm. But you can't stop the job until you have enough saved. So right. You need to have, when they say like 3 months living expensive, 4 months living expensive, and I'm just being practical, have that, or if you have time coming to you, like vacation time, then figure out how to write maybe once a week or once every 2 weeks. So like you said, do a podcast once a week, once every 2 weeks, lean on social media more. And then when you know you're going to be able to put in for that vacation to go to whatever the convention is, then write a lot around the vacation, or write a lot after the vacation saying, basically, this is everything that I saw at the convention. So you get, and then people stay wanting to write. The easiest way to go viral is to stay topical. Mm-hmm. So this is, April. So April, a lot of people don't know this, is Black Women History Month. It's also Autism Awareness Month. It's also Earth Month. Earth Days at the end of the month. So if you write 3 different articles that have to do with each of those things and share them on enough platforms, you could get a lot of eyes on them. For instance, like, you know, 10 comic book characters that are on the spectrum. Right. Actually, I should probably write that.
Should do it.
or, you know, a science fiction movie that deals with the earth and how, what XYZ movie teaches us about saving the earth or saving the environment. And that's an Earth Day post. So see how you can like tailor whatever you're talking about to the particular holiday. Is it all like that? No, but those are what you call your tentpole posts. Things that you know are going to get, you likes and hits. This is why I stay busy February and March, because Black History Month, Women's History Month.
Right.
I get asked to do a lot of things because no one wants to say that they don't have a Black woman or a woman on something, you know, and then it's quiet, it's crickets until Juneteenth. Right. but, you know, June is also Pride Month. Mm-hmm. You know, May is Asian American Pacific Islander Heritage Month. You know, there's a lot in there. So find ways to talk about, you know, if you've been waiting to write about Kamala Khan, start writing it now, release it in May, you know, get, there are, you know, Mother's Day's in there. There's all these different, so every month there's a bunch of different holidays that you can write stuff for.
Right.
And then it will get seen because people are going to be searching for those hashtags, searching for those keywords. It doesn't have to be complicated. It just has to be relevant. And then yes, write that think piece that you've always wanted to write. That's not a problem, but try and get that other stuff in there too. And then stay consistent, start a newsletter. Some people just write on their newsletter. Some people have turned blogging into like their Substack or whatever. You can do that too. Nothing wrong with that. Mm-hmm. But just start. You're not going to succeed if you don't start at all. And I am the president of analysis paralysis. I'm telling you, just start. Like, you might need to make a bunch of lists, you might have a bunch of ideas, but do it like a test where you give yourself, you know how they say pencils down, you know, the test or time's up. Put a timer on or give yourself a date that you'll say, I will stop coming up with stuff by this date and start writing and stick to that, you know, and it will not be good. That is the point. It has to be bad for you to get good. And then try and find people that you trust to read your stuff, and find an editor, somebody who wants to be an editor, and have them edit your stuff so that there's, you get, because that's the one thing that I didn't realize, because kind of like when you realize that mangakas do the art and the writing. Mm-hmm. I thought you had to do all the things. But right. When I found out with not just book writing, but in journalism, that there's an editor that is supposed to help you correct your thoughts and stuff. I was like, oh, that's helpful. Okay.
Yeah.
And the same thing with book writing, you know, and then I learned with my book, there's copy editing. And then there's also line editing. I just went through line edits. My God. And that's literally, they go sentence by sentence through your entire book and tell you what's wrong with it. It's very, very disheartening, but it's worth it.
Yeah.
It's just start thinking about those pillars. And then think about when people talk about niches, they get very like, oh, you need to niche down. You can't think about stuff like mainstream. As a Black woman, Black person, Black, you know, even queer, whatever, you are the niche.
Mm-hmm.
So if you think, oh, too many people are talking about this, no, they're not. Mm-hmm. No, you haven't talked about it.
Right.
What's your perspective? Like, oh, you know, well, everybody's talking about Alita Battle Angel. Okay. But has anybody written about the fact that she's a Latina superhero? Wait, what? But it's a manga. Every one of the leads was Latino. She has superpowers. That's a Latina superhero.
Right.
Oh. You know, like, mm-hmm. Think about, pull what you into what you're writing. And that's one of the things that I got away from and that I try and tell everybody. When I started being paid to write, I started trying to write more like I thought other people wanted me to write, not like what I was hired for, which is to write like me.
Right.
And I've come back to that. But it means you always, you have to practice. You have to keep honing your voice. So I really that was helpful.
Definitely helpful. I really like what you said about, you know, even if you're not comfortable putting it out into the world, like starting that Google Doc, because that's like where a lot of my ideas start, at least, where I'm like, all right, let me open this new Google Doc and like jot down some ideas, jot some notes. And then when I'm ready, or like when you said that news hook comes around, or, you know, I'm like, oh shoot, it's like Hispanic Heritage Month. And I'm like, oh, I actually have like this piece I've been thinking about. Let me.
Right. Like try and make some notes somewhere in the document so that when you do a search, you'll remember where it is. Cause I'm that big too, on that. I stay losing stuff. So like if you think, oh, this would be great for Halloween, you are not going to remember in October. So just make sure you have a note.
Yeah, that too. I mean, I used to use Trello when I was like full-time freelancing, but yeah, so I just really like that though. But I think like even just like getting that daily practice in and not putting it out into the world, I feel like that's a really cool solution to like, where you're still getting that writing experience, but it's like, okay.
Yeah, some people are just, you know, and listen, it's real. Like pitching still terrifies me. And people go, but I, and I'm like, because it's not about just being terrible. Yeah, it's not just putting myself out there. It's just a rejection. And then you get rejected, rejected, rejected. Mm-hmm. But then when you learn that sometimes they're not rejecting you because they don't like it. They're rejecting you because you pitched too late. Or your email didn't come through, went to the junk mail. Or like, there's so many reasons why your email didn't get responded to. But the biggest thing is usually when you're pitching, not looking at what the site has.
Right.
Like I get people all the time, like, you know, I'd like to write on your blog about, you know, my experience with socks. I'm like, what?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, no.
I had someone reach out to pitch someone for the podcast and I was looking at their site and I'm like, are they a Sailor Moon fan? Like this person just some like business guy. He's like into real estate. And I'm like, are they a fan of anime?
It was just one of those, oh, you have a lot of followers, you have a lot. That happened to me when my numbers jumped on Twitter. I started getting emails out the blue. I'm like, who are these people?
Makes no sense.
Nope. It's just there are apps that will show you who has really high engagement. Mm-hmm. And so businesses will just try and target those people just to get some traffic.
Yeah. Well, I'll take it as a compliment then.
You should. You're doing great.
Thank you. So are you, obviously. But yeah, no, that's a lot of good advice though. I think, you know, Medium, get your WordPress. And if you're not comfortable with that, like taking it to Google Docs, but also like just starting. Like,
Oh,
I feel
Microsoft,
like,
Microsoft Word, whatever you're comfortable with. But like some people are like, oh, I don't want everybody to see my stuff yet. It's like, fine, just get in the practice. Just get in the practice, write in a journal, whatever it is. And then if you are going to start, whether or not it's a Medium page, a YouTube channel, a podcast, don't start with one. Don't put that kind of pressure on yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Get three or four in the can and then put them up weekly so that you can be ahead of your schedule. I love batching. I'm back into a batching schedule because I had to stop for a while, but there is nothing like going, oh right, it's done, I just gotta post it. Just love that.
Yep. That's exactly what I do with this podcast. Yeah, I love just like being a few weeks ahead of schedule, and it's like, oh, I just post it, just promote it, post it, and I'm good to go. Yeah, it's good stuff. Well, almost final question. Just like Sailor Moon had her, Sailor Moon says a phrase at the end of every episode. Where'd your phrase be? So Sailor Karma or Sailor the Blurred Girl says. Yes,
Sailor the Blurred Girl says. Yeah, that's so cute. A few people have heard me say this on social media before, but I will say it again. Stop comparing your behind the scenes to everybody else's highlight reel. That's my big one. Because people keep looking at, I think if people, it's better now with TikTok, but people keep looking at people's Instagrams. Like, filters exist for a reason. Filters are there to make people look good and look better and look cute or better or different than they actually are. Why are you comparing yourself to this person with all these filters and that's just showing you this much of themselves? Like, I haven't worn pants since 2019. Nobody knows that. I mean, now they do, but I just, but I mean, like, it's just, everybody has this image of, oh my God, I want to be like whoever.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know. You don't know what they're going through. You don't know what they're dealing with. And you want to be like you. So when people say to me, like, oh, I want to do what you do, it's like, no, you don't. You want to be better. You want to be better. So yes, stop comparing your behind the scenes to everybody else's highlight reel.
That is so true, because not even just filters. Like, I think of like when I post a picture, like there are probably like 10 pictures I took that day. And I picked the best one. So.
Oh, I know I do. When I, the day I go live, my boyfriend always says, like, I never see you on the day you go live. Cause when I go live, my Twitch show is Tuesdays, 8 p.m. and 10 p.m. We're on hiatus right now, but I full makeup, do the show. And then after the show, I just bank a bunch of content. I bank a bunch of TikToks. I bank a bunch of reels. Why not? I got the makeup on. I'm not doing this every day.
Right. Yeah.
So I sit there and I record a bunch of stuff. And he's like, I don't see you for hours. And I'm like, yeah, I know. Cause I got to get all this stuff done.
Yeah.
But that's my little banking of social media on those days, because I don't normally look that cute. Now I did take some time to do some not as pretty posts so that I could show the world that I am a human being.
Pretty.
Thank you.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's natural to want to like look your best on a camera.
Yeah. Yeah. Put your best self out in the world. You know, and wants to like, here's all my mess and like my the worst, top 10 worst things about me.
Right. So, I mean, it is disheartening when you're like looking at a pile of dishes and then you go on Instagram and you see these people with like perfect homes and perfect vacations. And it's like, I wish.
Yeah. I'm just going to go lay on the couch now.
Right. Exactly. Right. And watch Ghost in the Shell.
Watch Ghost in the Shell. Or the Great British Bake Off.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, I, that's great advice. I think that is a really good Sailor Moon says, or Sailor the Blurred Girl says.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And then what is next for you, and where can people find you? Or where do you want people to find you?
I am kind of all over the place. Let's see. I actually just did a Rotten Tomatoes after show about Morbius, which is hilarious.
Oh my God. I need to watch that.
It is hilarious. It's not out yet. I think maybe by the time this airs, it'll be out, but it's not out right now because I'm still recovering. I have, of course, I have the book coming out, Protectors of Wakanda. It drops September 13th. Please pre-order. You can just find me actually everywhere, theblurredgirl.com, or follow me on Twitter. It's in all my profile handles, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, everywhere. Obviously, you can find me on TikTok. I did do a TikTok live, my first one a couple days ago, talking about the book with somebody else, but it was fun. So I might do more.
So I didn't even know there was TikTok Live, and
Oh,
I feel
yes.
so behind.
Yes. It's fun too.
Okay, all
It's fun
right.
too. And the podcast is continuing. One of the reasons why I'm taking a hiatus from the live show is I usually take a hiatus every 10 weeks. And so January, February, March, I'm kind of late for one. So I needed a bit of a break. And I think I'm gonna sort of restructure the show a little bit. It's coming back, and I still am on Twitch Thursday mornings at 8 a.m. Right now I'm finishing up Gris. So if you would like to tune in and watch me cry, feel free. And Saturdays, I now have a Saturday, we call it Saturday Matinee, where we watch movies over on Twitch. So I'm not gonna say what movies we're watching this weekend because they'll be different by the time this comes out, but we every Saturday around 4 p.m. Eastern, we watch movies. So if you have Amazon Prime, the first movie is a short that everybody can watch, and then the second movie is always on Amazon Prime, so you need to have Prime to watch it with us. But it is so much fun, and it's a great way to relax.
That sounds like so much fun. I need to hop in one day and join because I love movies.
Absolutely.
That sounds awesome. I'll definitely drop all the links to everything down below. Wherever you're listening to this, it'll be available in the show notes. And yeah, that's it. Thank you so much. We reached the
Thank you. Yes, no, that was a lot of fun. I appreciate it. I'm sorry if I was so long-winded.
you're fine. I was just like, this is so awesome hearing about like your thought process and like all the advice you have and just like, of course, Sailor Moon. I always love talking about Sailor Moon. There's no such thing as long-winded in Sailor Moon in any sentence
No, there isn't. Oh, and this, you
that
know what? I completely forgot to say this. I also have a Patreon, patreon.com/theblurgirl, and there's now going to be, I have several different levels, and of course, if you're a Twitch subscriber, you probably already have access, but I am gonna also be teaching through my Patreon some of how I do what I do. So there's gonna be a TBG biz level where I talk about, okay, so this is how you do a podcast without a booth or without a studio, or this is how you set up a writing schedule, or this is how you edit your videos. This is so I'm hoping that that will help a lot of people because I get a lot of questions and I feel like I can't answer everything at once, so it's probably easier to answer in one place, and it would be a huge support to the channel too.
Yeah, I think that's an amazing idea, first of all. And I think it will be really helpful for a lot of people. That's great. Well, thank you for that. I'll definitely drop the link to the Patreon as well. I'm guessing that may be ready by the
Oh
time
yeah, no,
this
it's
episode
ready.
drops. Okay. So this it'll be ready if you want to sign up as you're listening or watching this. But once again, I am Victoria L. Johnson, host of the Sailor Moon Fan Club podcast. You can find me at Miss Old School on Twitter and Instagram. I'm also on TikTok, and I probably will be doing a live at some point at Sailor Victoria. And you can find the podcast on all major podcast streaming platforms, YouTube, just Apple Podcasts, Spotify. Leave us a review if you can. Would love that. And we also have merch at mooniesclub.com. Wearing my Moonies Club sweatshirt right now,
Which
actually.
is cute. I have to
Thank
get my hands on
you.
that.
And that's it. Thanks so much for listening, Moonies. And thank you, Karma, for coming on the Sailor Moon Fan Club podcast.
Thank you. Thanks, everybody.
Bye.